Bill Yates gets emotional. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Field Yates. We're filling in for the guys. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, with all guests joining us via the Goodyear Hotline. And let's get back to Thursday Night Football Field here for a minute, where you did get very emotional. I'll get to that in a second. Tom Brady, yeah. He had a couple touchdown passes. Leonard Fournette, he was amazing. The Bucks, they hold off the Eagles 28-22. I was very emotional during that game because I had Leonard Fournette on my bench in fantasy football, where he racked up over 30 points in my league. Just hoping Miles Gaskin can do something for me this week.
Come on, Miles.
Jacks, but I digress. So I was very emotional during the game because of that. You were very emotional for an entirely different reason. A lot of people, of course, emotional, particularly Eagles fans, at the taunting call that essentially ends up sealing the deal there in that game, where it appeared that the defense had actually gotten a stop of Leonard Fournette on a 2-yard gain on a first down, and then the officials deemed that DN Jannard Avery had taunted Fournette. After the two came face to face with each other, there was like a light contact, like chest bump, if you will, Field, and all of a sudden a taunting penalty. Gives Tom Brady an opportunity, makes a couple passes, bada bing, bada boom, the Bucks go on to win. What did you make of that taunting call?
So let me start with a couple of things here. First of all, the refs did nothing wrong. The refs called the call that by the letter of the law, they are expected to call right now in the current state of the NFL. Amber, I've always believed the NFL has been far too reactionary as opposed to proactive. However, sometimes it's proactive in ways that make zero sense to me. The NFL deemed that there was some sort of taunting issue. Now, listen, I know I love football. It's the sport I cover. Nothing is better than watching footballs on a Sunday. And there have been instances, I should say, where maybe things were like a little bit excessive. Maybe a little bit, maybe a tad. But honestly, like, I can't think of a celebration that went so far past the line that it felt to me unsavory, inappropriate, not fit for a football game. And I don't think many NFL fans feel differently than I do. And yet the NFL put in this ridiculous taunting call that has basically forced these players to become robots. And they've already done this in other ways to players. You know, defensive players can hardly breathe on quarterbacks or else they get called for roughing the passer. Now, in the heat of the moment, they're supposed to make a play, get up, and just walk right back to the huddle. The NFL's trying to make this game devoid of emotion. It makes no sense to me. And I want to be clear as well that the call on the Eagles was not the reason why they lost that game last night. But it certainly didn't hurt the Bucs' chances to win that game. It just is such a ridiculous notion to me. Like, I would love to hear the thought process behind those who advocated for this rule in the first place. And here's what's going to happen, by the way. You know what's going to happen. Give it, I don't know, another few weeks. Maybe the next time the owners or the competition committee meets, and they're gonna rectify this by removing the rule, which is so dumb because it was the most predictable thing that could happen from the moment this rule was instituted. I just think that we're trying so hard to rid the game of emotion, and it is making the product significantly worse as a result of it.
It's already the robot league. I mean, you already have such a hard time getting straightforward answers out of any of these guys. And we know how the NFL operates generally. And they really do. They take the personality out of the game. I don't understand how that's good from a product perspective. I mean, sure, maybe you don't want players taunting each other in some sort of like really egregious, offensive way that, you know, you have children watching the game. You're trying to appeal to families. Fine. I don't know, though, why we can't just tell our kids, hey, these are grown adults, and if there's like a minor chest bump contact between the two players like there was in this game last night, maybe you can't do that in your little league game. But that doesn't mean that those men can't do it there. I don't understand why it's on the NFL now to decide that it needs to scrub all of the competitive nature out of the game, because really at the end of the day, these guys are competitors, and you want that emotion, like you said there. For me, it makes sports more fun. Like, I love the trash talking, and I love the rivalry and the emotion and the heat of it. You were very emotional last night, by the way, because you tweeted out in all caps, and I don't even, you know, you and I haven't worked together before, so we don't even really know each other, and yet I know that when you're writing in all caps, it's an emotional Field Yates.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often. I'm not a big all caps tweeter. Yeah.
get rid of this stupid taunting rule. And then you took it a step further from the Caps and you added the NFL.
And here's the deal, though, is that I'm not saying the NFL will overturn its rule and I'm going to take some level of credit for it. But the reality is that I started off by saying the NFL is far too reactionary sometimes. And it's going to see the tweets from a bunch of people that follow football and love it and advocate for it consistently. And they're going to realize that that's the voice of the people. People who are against this rule on principle, people who think this rule is ridiculous. And again, I'm not saying that there is no line that can be drawn for players and how they act on the field. Like, there is a certain decorum that I think is expected out of athletes at any level.
I do wish we trusted them a bit more, though, to find that line. Like, they're grown adults doing a job. Why can't they find the line? Like, why can't we trust them to kind of find that line without making the rules so darn strict to take the fun out of it as well?
I can only think of one example in recent years where, like, if I were a parent and my kid saw it, I'd have to be like, wait, what just happened there? And that was when Odell scored a touchdown and he used the dog urinating celebration, right? Like, if my kid was there and we were watching from the end zone, I'd be like, all right, that's a, like, I'm not sure I totally, like, am on board with that. But, like, players are being at, the flags are being thrown on players when they get up and, like, flex, right? Like, I flex when I, like, you know, flip a, like, an omelet perfectly in the morning. Like, it doesn't take much for me to get excited. So I can't imagine what it would be like to score a touchdown, right? Like, I just find it so ridiculous that these players are basically being reduced down to nothing more than robots on the field, which is such a shame because this is the best we have to offer in the football world. And emotion is not only a part of the game, it's a great part of the game. It's something that I love. I love seeing the idea that these players work tirelessly for years to get to this NFL. And they should have the opportunity to celebrate like it is one of the most unique things that they could do. They are... You know, this is, they're part of the 0.00001% of people that get to play football at the pro level. Bring some emotion back. It's ridiculous.
I do agree that it is ridiculous. I flex every time I properly hit a hard out here on ESPN Radio. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. So last night, Hurts, 12 for 26, 115 passing, a touchdown pass, an interception. He also had 44 yards on the ground. I mean, I didn't think he was terrible by any means, but a lot of criticism now is surrounding the Eagles and how they're using Jalen Hurts. Do you think he's in a position here in order to be able to succeed?
Right now, it's right now, no. However, like, there is enough natural skill from Jalen Hurts that he could be molded and developed into an efficient quarterback. What I don't understand right now is sort of the direction and I'm trying to think of the proper word. But, like, what's the blueprint for how Philadelphia wants to be successful? Like, when things are going great, what do they want to look like? And I don't know what the answer is. Now, it's hard when you're down, you know, basically the entire game last night. The Bucs score in their opening drive and had the lead for the entire game, or at least were, you know, they never trailed in the game. But the Eagles' offense lacks rhythm. It lacks direction right now. And I think that makes the evaluation on Jalen Hurts more difficult. Now, to be clear, Jalen Hurts is imperfect, right? I mean, there are a number of throws last night where he just missed, especially in the first half. He was errant and inaccurate. But I'm having a hard time. I was talking about this with Mina Kimes recently, actually. And I said, like, your evaluation of Jalen Hurts could change from week to week. He might be the trickiest quarterback evaluation in the NFL. If you told me 5 years from right now, Jalen Hurts was one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, part of you would be like, I can see that. If you told me 5 years from now that he has developed into the kind of guy that you use most exclusively as a backup quarterback, I might be able to see that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people forget that we've seen him in, what, 10 games? I mean, he's not a rookie,
starts, yeah.
But it's a very limited sample size that we've seen with Jalen Hurts thus far. Sticking in the NFC East, Daniel Jones has officially been cleared to play in the Giants game against the Rams, but should he? We'll answer that question next. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, Field Yates, filling in for the guys here on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+. It is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. Amber Wilson, Field Yates filling in for the guys with all guests joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. You can hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed at AmberW790, at Field Yates. We learned that Field gets sometimes a bit emotional on his Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. So you can always check out his Twitter feed to see that when he tweets in all caps. We know he is fired up, and we'll see if he's fired up over the next story. Daniel Jones, he has been cleared to play for the New York Giants. And Field, the Giants are bad. Like, New York is bad, bad. There is really no kind way to say it. It's not going to get any easier for them. They now take on the Los Angeles Rams this weekend, of course, with Stafford at the helm rolling. Mm. Daniel Jones, that concussion, it looked ugly. He's gone through the full concussion protocol. So fine, like if they medically clear him to play, I don't have a huge issue with that. Nevertheless, I think it still begs the question with this difficult matchup, should he play?
As long as he's medically cleared, yes. And I've learned, and I think we've all learned with this concussion protocol laid out by the NFL, that first of all, the best course of action is having the decisions be made by independent neurological consultants, right? I mean, you don't want this to be a team doctor decision or even a coach decision because there's intrinsic motivation for those players to be available. This is a tricky one, though, because if you had asked me what was going to dictate coming into the season whether the Giants take a step forward, Amber, I would have said, hey, if Daniel Jones takes a step forward, this Giants team takes a step forward. And yet, here I am, 5 weeks into the season, almost 6 games into the season, saying Daniel Jones has taken a step forward. The Giants are also 1-4 right now. So it's this weird sort of dichotomy in thinking. And there's a very good chance, by the way, that they will be 1-5 after Sunday because they play the Rams that we just mentioned. Have you seen their upcoming schedule? Have you seen what it looks like?
I have not. Is it brutal? I mean, it's brutal, I assume.
It's brutal. Let me pull this up just for a second. Bear with me here. So they play the Rams this week. They just played the Cowboys this past week, obviously. So the Giants are in the second game of a stretch that goes, they beat the Saints 2 weeks ago in overtime. So then Cowboys, Rams, the Panthers were 3-2. They play the Chiefs in Kansas City on Monday Night Football. They host the Raiders, who are 3-2. Then they play the Bucks in Tampa on Monday Night Football. Like, the Giants could be an improved team overall compared to where they were last year and escape from that next 5-game stretch at, like, I don't know, 2-7? So it's this weird, as much as they are making progress in one regard, which may be the most important part, which is their quarterback, the team's results might be enough to frustrate people beyond measure, and we may still be talking about whether this team this offseason needs to consider a quarterback in the draft, because that's what we've seen other teams do in recent drafts. Is like the most prime example being the Arizona Cardinals. Like, if there's somebody available who might be an upgrade, do you have to do it?
Well, I guess if you maybe are convinced, I mean, the Arizona Cardinals were in a unique position because we don't normally see you waste the 2 first-round picks back to back, but they had an intimate familiarity with Kyler Murray, so they knew, you know, and I think that that is a very unique situation where you would feel that confident going from Josh Rosen to a Kyler Murray and doing that back to back, and your ownership would trust you in that situation as well to do that. And I don't know if there's that necessarily that quarterback out there. You did mention Daniel Jones has taken a step forward. I mean, he did take a step forward here in his third year on a bad Giants team. So doesn't that even speak more highly for Daniel Jones? Like, what I'm wondering here isn't so much if Daniel Jones is the question, but I am wondering, in just his second year with Joe Judge, is there a point here where his seat gets a little hot? Because you had the issue with Kadarius Toney getting ejected with the Cowboys. A lot of people really critical because Judge comes out and defends his player there. And then there was like that weird press conference where it seemed like he didn't know where his quarterback was. How hot is the seat that Joe Judge is sitting in?
You know, history would suggest it's not hot. The Giants have been one of the most loyal organizations up until recent history, in which we have seen some coaching turnover there, which included Ben McAdoo, who was ousted rather succinctly and after a brief tenure in New York. So I think it's a little early for me to feel like I have a strong lean one way or the other. I happen to think that Joe Judge has been doing some good things for the Giants. I know ultimately the old Bill Parcells saying is what people lean on when it comes to evaluating coaches, and that saying is, you are what your record says you are. and they were a losing team last year and currently a losing team in a major way this year. That's tough, though, because I think what's happened is in recent years, the shelf life for quarterbacks, not even the shelf life, but the indoctrination period for quarterbacks and coaches has grown, has shrunk, actually, right? I mean, we're talking about this being, and you know this well, Amber, like Sunday is a huge game for Tua Tagovailoa. We tanked for Tua 2 years ago, and now people are wondering whether he's actually the answer going forward in Miami. In New York, a coach can be on the hot seat after 21 games. Like, it sounds a little bit ridiculous in principle, but that may just be emblematic of the NFL that we live in now.
It may. I mean, I know with the Dolphins situation also, they are in a position where they could address that situation.
Yes,
I think really with those multiple first round picks that they picked up in 23, I felt like when they made the moves that they made in this last draft with trading back and then back up and moving around some picks, making sure that they still have multiple first rounders then, I felt like that they were doing that in order to be able to address the quarterback situation at a certain point here where by then they would feel confident in knowing what they have into it. This Daniel Jones situation, though, maybe even more complicated in New York, because like you said, he did take that step forward, and we all expected the Giants would then take a step forward with him, but that doesn't appear to be the case. Coming up next, we'll address the most burning questions heading into week 6 of the NFL next, after this word, first, from our friends at Wendy's. Rise, shine, and dine with breakfast at Wendy's and get a sausage or bacon, egg, and Swiss croissant for just $1.99. Fresh cracked eggs, a buttery flaky croissant, and your choice of bacon or sausage, all for just $1.99. So head to Wendy's in the AM for a breakfast worth waking up for, and with a deal this delicious, the biggest question you'll have to face today is just sausage or bacon. Decisions. Choose wisely. Choose Wendy's. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. We roll along here on Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, and Field Yates filling in for the guy. You've got NFL questions. We've got answers here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Field Yates. We're filling in for the guys. You can hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed at AmberW790 and at Field Yates. So there's a lot of action still to get to here in week 6 for the NFL. We will bring in our producer, Devin Kane. He's going to help us with this segment. He's going to tee us up with some NFL questions, and Field and I will try to answer those questions. Hey, Devin.
You guys ready for this?
We're ready.
All right, Amber, let's start with you.
Born ready, baby.
Let's go. Amber, can the Jaguars actually win a game this season? They're in London this weekend hosting.
I mean, they can.
Taking on the Miami Dolphins.
They can win a game. I'm hoping it doesn't come against my Miami Dolphins quite this weekend. This would not be the weekend that I'd like to see it, but it's a weekend that, frankly, like, it could happen. Field mentioned it last segment. Tua Tagovailoa coming off of yet another injury. He's back for this game, but they are going to be shorthanded. They're not going to have their best player on their team, who, of course, is Xavien Howard. They're not going to have Devontae Parker, so they're not going to have all their targets there for Tua. So, yes, the Jags are playing a lowly Dolphins team that has been underperforming all season in a huge way. All of us are quite shocked down in Miami. Nevertheless, this Jags team is bad, and I'd like to think that this Dolphins team, even though it's been underperforming, is better than this and is not going to allow this to happen in the mother country over there across the pond. What do you got, Field?
Guys, is anybody else available for the rest of the show? Because I'm here to tell you, I think the Jaguars are winning on Sunday.
What?
What? 20 straight losses? They cannot possibly win on Sunday, could they?
We were doing so well. We were getting along.
I kind of think, you know, I know, Amber, it's okay. If you want to end our friendship before it's really even started, like, I understand. I don't mean, it's not personal, though. I just have this weird, sneaky feeling about the Jacksonville Jaguars. Their backs are up against the wall. But so are the Dolphins in some ways, right? I mean, the Dolphins are 1-4. It could be 0-5 if not for a fumble by the Patriots' Damian Harris in week one inside the 10-yard line with, like, minutes to go in the game.
Details.
That's right. Tua's return certainly helps, but the Dolphins are rudderless on offense. Kind of look like the Eagles out there, right? I mean, in the injuries and the lack of direction, I think this could be a potential upset spot here for the Jaguars. And by the way, like, it would be, maybe Jaguars fans would just be happy about their win if they get one after 20 straight losses. On the other hand, it'd be like, all right, so we won a game. We haven't won a game in the United States, though, for longer than that. So, like, a different streak would still prevail even if the Jaguars win on Sunday.
All right, Field, next up, we're coming back to you. We have a matchup between the Vikings. The Vikings are 2-3, and they're taking on the Panthers, who are 3-2. Between those two teams, who do you think has a better chance of making the playoffs?
I'm going to go with the Vikings, which sounds like a little bit of a maybe a contrarian take, given the fact that they have the inferior record to this point. But, you know, Carolina squandered a couple of, I mean, an opportunity last week against Philly that was just too good to, I mean, you can't lose those kind of games. Meanwhile, the Vikings have done the opposite. They have, or they found ways to lose, right? I guess they have done the same. But my point is that I do think Minnesota's offense is more complete right now because of Carolina's injury of Christian McCaffrey. I think he could return next week. That remains to be seen. And then Sam Darnold, like, in some ways he kind of reminds me of a younger version of Kirk Cousins, good in moments, bad in other moments, but I have slightly more trust in Kirk Cousins. I think the division is probably a little inferior as well in the NFC North compared to the NFC South.
I'm going to try to play devil's advocate here, but it's hard to do because I don't necessarily want to put my trust in Sam Darnold either. And nevertheless, I mean, the Panthers, it all comes down to the health of Christian McCaffrey, which Field mentioned, and he's been dealing with that hamstring injury. It looks like he's, you know, still not a go, but the Vikings have had their own concerns. They've had injuries as well to Dalvin Cook, most notably. So both of these teams struggling. The Vikings offense is really struggling to score touchdowns. If we're talking long-term big picture here, I guess I'll go with the Panthers, because if Christian McCaffrey does come back fully healthy, then fine. That'll alleviate some of that pressure off Sam Darnold. And maybe I'll be able to believe that he can get something done.
All right, Amber, next up. The Bengals are coming off a brutal loss against the Packers where kickers forgot how to kick. Can the Bengals avoid the trap game against a Lions team that isn't winning but are playing extremely hard? What do you think?
They are playing extremely hard, and obviously the emotional press conferences from Dan the Man, fine. I would say, though, that I don't know if this is actually a trap game. Like, I doubt, with the Cincinnati Bengals, are they at a point, an improved Bengals team, fine, but, like, are they at a point that they're overlooking teams?
That's a great point.
What are we doing here with a trap game? If you're the Bengals and you're already overlooking opponents, then you're in for some rough matchups here, because you certainly should not be at that point yet. They hung with them with the Packers. I mean, if anything, I guess you could call that like a good loss, because obviously a good Packers team. So no, I don't think that this is a trap game against a Detroit Lions team. I hope no games for the Cincinnati Bengals are trap games.
Such a great call here by Amber, because like the Bengals are 3-2. But like if we're talking about them overlooking opponents already, this is a team that picked first overall 2 years ago. Right? Like, if Cincinnati is anywhere close to the point where they're looking past opponents, then they're just not real in general. And I kind of think they are a more real team than not right now. So I think the Bengals find a way to win on Sunday. That being said, what I expect to happen is I expect the Lions to be up by like 32 points going into the fourth quarter, and then the Bengals to score on four straight plays, score a touchdown, kick the ball off, recover a fumble, return it for a touchdown, do it again, and then do it again. Because the Lions only find the most devastating, heartbreaking ways to lose.
All right, Field, sticking with you. Do the Browns have the tools to stop Kyler Murray and the high-octane Cardinals offense on Sunday?
I think stop is like a relative term, right? Because like we saw last week that I think the Browns' defense is okay, and they had zero answers for Justin Herbert last week. They allowed 47 points.
Who does?
No one does. No one does right now. You're very right in that assessment. But I think the Browns can make this, like, if they can hold the Cardinals under 30 points, it might just be a win for them. Like, the Cardinals' defense is good, and it may not be enough. Like, the Browns may need to score 35 somehow against that Cardinals' defense. But, yeah, if they can hold Kyler Murray and the Cardinals under 30, it's a win.
Yeah, is that who has the answer there
nobody,
for Justin Herbert?
Right.
I mean, nobody
yeah.
really has the answer, I guess, for Kyler Murray either, or this Cardinals team yet. I do think that the Browns have the firepower where maybe they could do it. I mean, I think the real question here actually comes down to Arizona's defense. They've been terrible against the run, and what can the Browns get done there? But you're right. As long as the Browns try to outpace them there and out-survive them there, then certainly it is possible that they take down the undefeated and the 1972 Dolphins can pop the champagne.
All right, last one. Amber, we have a marquee QB matchup with Justin Herbert and the Chargers taking on Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Who has the best chance to win the MVP award this year between those two guys?
Oh, that is a good question. Nobody has the answer to this question. They've both been playing unbelievably. And I would say that this, for me, if I have to choose now in week six, would come down to experience. So I guess I'll give the nod there to Lamar. Also, Lamar, I think, opens up the offense in a way that really confuses you defensively. Like, if I was asking you who you would rather as a defensive player match up with Field, who would the answer to that question be? Because for me, I would rather not see either of these guys. But yeah, if I have to see one of them under center across from me, for me, it would be Justin Herbert over Lamar Jackson, just because of all the things Lamar can do that makes reading him as a defense absolutely impossible. So I'll give the nod to Lamar. And of course, he's got some experience there with that whole MVP thing also.
Yeah, it's a pretty slight advantage. Because no matter which one you pick, it'd have to be a pretty slight advantage. I'll go with Lamar as well. And I think what makes Lamar so humbling as a defensive player is that you can have the perfect play call. You can dial up exactly what you're looking for. And Lamar can dice you. He can just find a way to demoralize you. And I've talked about this with people recently, is that there are times where you play the coverage right and like a better athlete on offense does something ridiculous. Like, hey, let's you have perfect coverage of Mike Evans. And Mike Evans just goes up and gets the ball. And it's like, hey, they get paid too, right? With Lamar, you can do everything right. The coverage can be perfect. The rush lanes can be perfect. And he can just do something that's so otherworldly that you're like, there's literally nothing we could have done to alter that play other than him retiring before the next time he takes a snap. Lamar is just like that to defenses.
Thanks, Devin. That was a stellar appearance.
Thanks, guys. You did
always is.
That'll wrap up our NFL questions and answers. We have fantasy football, though, coming up next because, of course, we have Field Yates. He's the expert. We can't leave without getting some of that fantasy football knowledge from him. We'll do that next. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, Field Yates, filling in for the guys on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. I'm Amber Wilson. He is Field Yates. We are filling in for the guys. And since Field is here, we have to get the good fantasy football advice. You do not want it from me because...
You sure about that?
No, I'm pretty darn sure. Now, I've been crushing it in fantasy. And then, you know, I decided it was a great idea to... Well, we don't need to discuss it. Yeah. I don't want to rehash what happened in last night's game to me as there's now 30-plus points sitting on my bench in fantasy. And the probability of me winning has gone from me dominating to now the probability being that I am losing this week in fantasy. This isn't about... I digress, Phil. This isn't about my fantasy team. This is about us helping the people at large listening to ESPN Radio. So Field Yates is here, of course, fantasy football expert and NFL insider. And we are going to go through some stardom and sit-ums. Are you ready for this?
I am so ready for this. Let's go.
Let's start with Kadarius Toney.
Start
now, we know what happened. Well, simmer down.
Okay.
Field.
Sorry.
We know what happened there against the Cowboys. Ejected New York Giants wide receiver. He's taking on the Rams. What do we do here with Kadarius Toney?
All right. Now that I've been a little bit more patient, start him. So here's the good news for Kadarius Toney. Over the past 2 weeks, he has been the NFL's third leading receiver and second leading receiver in terms of catches. He's been awesome. And I understand that the counterpoint is that, hey, the Giants are going to have Sterling Shepard back this week. They may have Darius Slayton back this week. However, this Giants team is not in a position to rid their best, most explosive player right now of opportunities and touches. Along those lines, I think they found something special in Kadarius Toney. I do believe he'll be busy, maybe not to the tune of 10 catches, but if I'm the Giants, part of my offensive game plan every single week is 7, 8, maybe even 10 targets per game for number 89.
Go Gator. Moving on. Darrell Williams, obviously Kansas City running back. He's taking on the Washington football team this week. That team has been in the news a whole lot, Field Yates. A lot of it because of what's happening off the field,
yeah.
but also because their defense is far more terrible than any of the experts thought that it would be with all the big names that that defense has. What do we do here? Start him or sit him?
Yeah, start again for Darrell Williams. And the Chiefs used a first-round pick on Clyde Edwards-Helaire 2 years ago. He has been frustrating because he's been in and out of the lineup, and he has not been as great as some of us thought he would be when the Chiefs used that 32nd overall pick on him out of LSU. Here's the good news for Darrell Williams. Unlike Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's not going to be splitting snaps. I mean, he will cede some to Jerick McKinnon, but I do think that Darrell Williams will be easily the Chiefs' leader in running back touches this upcoming weekend. And also, unlike Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the Chiefs are going to use him at the goal line. The Chiefs rarely used Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the goal line, which is a money-in-the-bank opportunity, in large part because they give the carries to Darrell Williams instead. So I've got him inside my top 20 for running backs this week.
Moving on to Cleveland, Baker Mayfield, of course, the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. He is taking on the undefeated Arizona Cardinals this weekend. Do we start Baker or do we sit him?
This is a sit him for me. This is a pretty simple one because it's not that the matchup is the only reason. It's not a great matchup. The Cardinals are 5-0 for a reason. You don't play just good offense and win five straight games. They play some good defense as well. But this is just about Baker himself. The numbers tell you he has not been anything close to a starting quarterback in fantasy so far this year. You multiply that by the fact that you can start right now off the top of your head and probably name 10 quarterbacks that whenever they play, you start them, right? Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and players like that that are what we call set it and forget it. No room for Baker Mayfield in my lineup this week.
Is there room for Joe Mixon? The Cincy running back, he is taking on the Detroit Lions. Our producer, Devin Kane, was wondering if it's a trap game for Cincy. I'm hoping that there's no trap games. I'm hoping Joe Mixon is not overlooking his opponent in this one, but do we start him or sit him?
Yeah, I mean, if you saw last week, you'd be like, you played 28% of the snaps. That's not great. Now, he did score a touchdown, which was good, but this week I expect him to be a whole lot busier. Actually, as a matter of fact, his coach, Zach Taylor, said he will be back to his full workload this Sunday. So I'm starting Joe Mixon, really talented player, good in the passing game, certainly a gifted runner. It's hard to find running backs that have that kind of workload. And you factor in this, not playing this weekend at all. No Christian McCaffrey, he's out due to injury. No Alvin Kamara, he's out due to injury. No Nick Chubb, Kamara's on a bye. No Nick Chubb, he's out due to injury. We've got all these players that normally would be in your lineup who are not. So start Joe Mixon.
I want to make sure we get to this next guy, so I'm going to skip ahead here on the list. Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, sit, unfortunately.
The Cleveland wide receiver, obviously taking on those Arizona Cardinals. Lots of talk about OBJ on today's show. He wants the ball more. It is confusing how rarely he's targeted by Baker Mayfield. I think only three targets in that loss to the Chargers last weekend. Do we start him or sit him?
Yeah, we're sitting him, and there's going to be a game where Odell Beckham Jr. has a worthwhile effort. Maybe it's this Sunday, but the problem is there's no way to ascertain when those big games are coming for Odell Beckham Jr., and far more likely is that he has a ho-hum game. And as you described earlier, Amber, it's not because of Odell. It's because of everything else, right? It's the system. It's the circumstances. It's the lack of just general usage for Odell Beckham Jr., so he's got to be on the bench until further notice. Odell Beckham Jr. is still a really talented guy, but the fact that he is not getting anywhere close to the targets you'd expect for him to get is disconcerting for this Cleveland offense.
Yeah, he's averaging, I think, 10 yards per catch coming off of last weekend, which sounds good until you realize that he was only targeted three times and only had a couple catches. And I don't know what is happening there with Baker Mayfield when he checks down, but the tape certainly shows that OBJ is open more than he's given credit for. Next, we have game one of the ALCS between the Bo Sox and the Astros coming up right after we're done. We will dive into that here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+.